Hey everybody, Kev O'Dunny with Ben Starr, back with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you some ideas, concepts, and guests, try and help you lead a more positively minded life. And as promised, and as anticipated greatly, we have Harville Hendricks, Helen LaKelly Hunt, and Carol Kramer in the studio. Harville and Helen are the authors of Getting the Love You Want. Are you getting the love you want? Well, if you're not, you can listen for this hour. You can find a way to get it. This is the 30th anniversary edition of Getting the Love You Want. It came out in 88, Harville?
88, yes.
And you were on that famous woman's talk show. What was her name?
Yes, Oprah Winfrey.
You were on Oprah Winfrey more than a dozen times, weren't you?
Yes, about 17.
What's her story with this book? Her story with this book? I mean, she obviously wanted you so much on her show.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we connected, and she read the book. That's one thing that I learned, that Oprah reads the books that go on her show.
Oh,
she liked
really?
It.
Really?
And then we had a really good conversation. She said she wanted to see couples work. So she set up a couples workshop uh-huh. in mm-hmm. her studio.
Wow.
And I work with couples for about 3 days with 5 hidden cameras. All the couples gave permission to record and whatever uh-huh. they said. So she showed that workshop in 2 45-minute segments the following month, I think. and that book became a New York Times bestseller 11 times after that, over the next 17 years it went on the New York Times bestseller list.
Helen, you jump in.
Actually, she submitted that show to the Emmy committee, and it won Oprah her first Emmy. So Harville feels like he made Oprah.
Let's hope she's not listening.
Okay. I hope you're getting royalties.
Yes.
Or at least a free car. but now we have them here on WBAI, and we are so fortunate to have them. You're going to get a chance, folks, to get this book today. Actually, we'll mail it out today. If you call 212-757-4488, the 30th anniversary edition. It's not even out yet.
Right?
It'll be out next week, 212-757-4488. For $35 to WBAI, you will get a free copy of the book. But I want to sort of make a workshop feel in the room here today, since Oprah did it over a few days. And I want to tell the audience, couples therapy and couples relatings changed with something Helen said to Harville a long time ago. Stop! Why don't one of us speak and the other listen? Helen, can you tell us a story about that?
Just the fact that I was wanting to date and marry someone interested in psychology, if possible. My first husband had interests completely different from me, business, and he did something illegal and had to leave the country. And inside of me was someone really longing to be a therapist. And when Harville and I started dating, oh my goodness, there were so many things compatible, but we fought a lot. We'd fight all the time. And so
somebody had to do it.
And she did. They actually did that in her living room. And we took it. We were regulated by it. It actually slowed us down.
No one's ever asked me that question. I think the answer is I was realizing that I was talking and he wasn't listening. And then I realized he was talking, I wasn't listening.
Right.
And we are taught in school to talk, and no one teaches us how to listen.
Right.
And so I suddenly saw myself that I couldn't listen while I was talking and while we were both talking. So I just needed to make space for me to really hear him and take turns listening as well as talking.
And this gave birth to what's called the Imago Dialogue.
Yes.
In some version where one person talks. So I want the audience to get this, because you can avoid all the money in couples therapy. You read this book, you do the exercises in this book, and you listen to your partner, and you don't need to go pay a professional. Well, maybe you do. We'll sort that. We'll sort that out. But yes. what the book tells you is the first principle is you need to stop and make sure the person is hearing what I'm right. saying to them. Most couples fight and they don't even hear what the other person is saying.
If marriage started like getting a car license, getting a marriage license where you had to read a book and pass a test to get your license,
right.
there you wouldn't have the problems in marriage
right.
that, you know, they get really bad.
Yeah.
If we can start this mm-hmm. early, and that's why this book coming out again is a chance for everyone to get a copy, even if they got one years
way
ago.
Back, because yeah. it is a different book and it's an easier book, I have to say. So it's more sequential, and the exercises in the back can really make, you know, go so well with the narrative of the book itself. I think it feels so cohesive now that the exercises make so much sense. They seamlessly go through the narrative.
So I just saw a couple a few minutes ago, and the wife said that I see the look on my husband's face when I'm just talking to him, and he just zones out. He feels that I'm just chattering.
Right.
And I said, that's why we mirror, so that you really have to connect with each other and mm-hmm. get what the other person is saying and be with them, be present with them.
Yeah. So let's talk about how it all fell apart. Because people want to know, I'm in a relationship, they're thinking, I'm in a relationship where I'm ready to listen, but my partner isn't ready to listen. And so they're in this fight all the time, and something happens, there's a breakdown. What happens in the traditional relationship before people seek out help?
What happens for it to break down?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there are a whole number of answers that can be an on-ramp to that, and they're all sort of specific to each couple. What Helen and I have discovered that if you take all the things that are reported and put them together in sort of a what we call a factor analysis package,
mm-hmm.
is that what happens to for the breakdown to occur is that each person in the relationship goes through an objection to difference. That is, when
why aren't you more like me?
I'm sorry?
Why aren't you more like me?
Why aren't you more like me? And if you were more like me, then we wouldn't be having this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be getting it right, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And this is when Helen's talking about she and I in this conflict, and now more than 40 years ago was when we had that conflict, that the objection was that I didn't like what she was saying, she didn't like what I was saying. So the fact that she was saying didn't like it meant that it was different.
Mm-hmm.
And she was looking at reality through Helen's eyes, and I wanted to look at reality through Harville's eyes, through my eyes, so she was seeing
right.
it accurately.
Right.
So that's a major, we think, the fundamental thing behind all relationship breakdown, and we call it my objection to your difference.
Mm.
And in order for that to be overcome, it's a power play. That's what goes into the power struggle, is that one of us has to regulate reality. So we live in a culture where competition is the primary value system.
Mm-hmm.
You compete, dominate, control, and you win. So if I have to have it my way. I have to have we have to have one reality in this relationship.
Right, and it's my reality.
It's my reality.
It's one reality, and it's my reality.
You and I, we have a cartoon and a workshop. It's called "You and I Are One, and I'm the One."
Mm-hmm.
So that's the fundamental thing about it.
So each one has their own universe, their own world.
Yes,
and they're holding to it.
Yes.
They're not giving up the ground.
Yeah,
and eventually that's going to lead to a breakdown.
Yes.
How long can people hold that up? How can they keep it going? So eventually one partner is going to collapse and say, we need to find another way. Is that typically the pattern?
Well, it's interesting that there are, I love that question, because the statistics on it is that the highest number of divorces occur at the seventh, around the seventh year, between 5 and 9 years. So 7 is the apex of that.
Yeah.
The other highest number, interestingly, is within 2 to 5 years after retirement. People who have lived through the night and they retire, they no longer have this thing in between them called careers.
Right.
And now they see each other face to face, and difference shows its ugly head.
Mm.
And that's the second highest divorce rate.
Interesting.
Now. But the divorce rate itself is still running around 50% of all people who get married get a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the numbers about it. If it goes wrong, however, it's going to go wrong probably on the honeymoon. There's another statistic that about, I forgot now the exact statistic, but it's about 95% of all honeymoons are from miserable to terrible.
95, really?
Yes, because when you go on the honeymoon,
yes.
Think how dangerous this is. You're on a honeymoon, and you're by yourself.
With your partner?
With your partner.
Yeah.
There's no job between you. You have to go to work every morning.
Right.
There are no children whom you have to take care of. Mm. So you're face to face with each other for a week, 2 weeks, for 3 weeks, a month, depending on all of that. So everything that is objectionable is going to show up on the honeymoon, and you're going to come back from the honeymoon wondering what in the hell happened and who did I marry?
Yeah.
But you say, well, you know, honeymoons are difficult and blah, 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 blah. We go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you have kids, you have blended family, you're going to have to blend a family, you go back to that. So you have the thing in between that sort of gives you some working space.
Mm.
But without that, you're head to head, and the marriage simply comes apart because of that intolerance of difference.
Right. It's almost like they don't know each other. It's like the retirees, they've lived 40 years together through careers and children, and they don't fully know each other.
No.
Or maybe not even themselves.
Yes.
Right? So the kids are gone, and the job is over, and who is this person I'm living with? And then, by the way, who am I?
And who am I? Yeah. And they don't know each other, because what happens is that you, in the romantic phase, when you fall in love, you create a fantasied, idealistic person in your mind whom you think is the person you married to. Well, of course, they keep showing up every morning as not being that person. They have egg on their face, and their hair is tousled, and their breath smells bad, and you know, other kinds of things go on. And you just reject that, saying that's not, you don't ever stop and say, hey, I had this picture of you, and you're not fitting that picture right now. Can you tell me who you are in this moment? And then you could say, well, I don't want anybody like that. So then you'd get rid of them. Or you could say, oh, so that's who you are. Well, let me see if I can come to terms with that. So what we say is you have to acknowledge that the person you're living with is not your fantasy. You have to accept them, because you can acknowledge it and then just get the hell out of there. You can also accept that they're different,
right,
but not connect with them. But you have to actually go on to appreciate their difference. That's to begin to see value in diversity. And then things began to change.
That we're going to talk about quite a bit.
But it's tricky, isn't it? Because both men and women, don't we all put our best foot forward in the very early days of a relationship?
Well, you do that also. You put your best foot forward. And what we think happens is that we constellate each other to do that. Because I kind of know that you are looking, I kind of sense you got a picture of a kind of perfect person. And so that I'll pick that up, and that constellates me then to actually behave sort of that way. So I'll collude. And part of the power struggle is not colluding anymore. I'm going to take back the self I gave up in order to for us to get on board.
It strikes me as it takes a lot of courage. Right? I mean, it takes a lot of courage for a couple to say,
oh, yeah.
I don't know. I thought you were this way.
Yes.
And turns out you have egg on your face. And all the things that you really are, I can't take. But to be able to hang in there with that, to not just, oh, that means we were never compatible and that's it. That's the end of the relationship.
Yeah.
And most people, a lot of people, 50% of people do that. They get their divorce.
Yes.
It's the people that stay in it that face the fact that I am an illusion-making machine. I make illusions. Mm-hmm. I created my partner.
Yep.
Right? I took the one good trait that my partner has, and I made everything else.
And your partner tried to make you believe the illusion. Aren't I great? Aren't I wonderful? I mean, this is what you were saying, that everyone puts their best foot forward when they're dating. The second thing, in addition to objection of difference, there's an unconscious reason that we're drawn to someone else, and that's that unconsciously we all have issues from childhood that were painful, and we select someone who will recreate those same feelings in our life so that we can heal the past. It's a chance to heal struggles that we've had in the past. So we don't even know about this part. And that's what this book unravels. It illuminates the fact that we pick these people that 2 years later we're going, why in the heck did I pick someone? They're such a jerk. I mean, they're not at all. Well, you know, they do this wrong, they do that wrong. Well, you pick them to read this book and learn about the fact that everyone had parents who were either intrusive or neglectful. If you had to say one or the other, they were always in your face telling you what you ought to do, or they weren't there. They sort of abandoned you, and you kept wishing that someone was paying attention to you. And inevitably, you end up feeling that way with your partner. Either they're micromanaging me, they're telling me what to do all the time, or, gosh, they're so busy. I thought we were going to be close, and where are they? They're at work, or they love golf, or they love their iPhone, and they don't seem to have attention. For me.
That's a good point.
So there's a way that two people can take this phenomenon, because it always shows up in every relationship, every marriage, and there are things you can do to transform that disappointment and make a commitment that two people can learn to heal each other's childhood wounds. And it becomes the most angelic, holy work to get to be one person's healer on the planet.
Beautiful. If you're just joining us, you're tuned into The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. Our guests today, Mr. Harville Hendricks, Helen LaKelly-Hunt, and Carol Kramer. We'll be back shortly after this musical break. We'll be back right after this.
Yeah, is your relationship a masquerade? Are you wearing a mask? It's hard not to, right? It's kind of hard not to. The disappointment that you feel and you find one day, all of a sudden, this is not the person I thought he or she was going to be. And it takes courage. Courage to stop and say, I'm going to trust what I really see. And tell my partner what it is. And then maybe we can figure out what we love about each other and how we can love better and what we can leave behind.
The interesting thing in romantic love is you see the things about the other person that are showing up, but you know the things about yourself that you don't want them to see. And so it does take a lot of courage. Mm.
But I think, Carol, also, you don't really fully know. You don't fully know yourself, all of your flaws. You don't know your own bad stuff necessarily.
Well, not unless you've been in Imago therapy for many years. I mean, one of the things that is so brilliant about the dialogue process is that the mirroring isn't just for the person who's listening to hear what the other person is saying. It also helps the person who is speaking to know themselves better, because the more we feel listened to, the more we feel safer, and the more we're experiencing our partner's presence. So we can really explore who we are.
And how many times do you find out actually what you think, really think, when you start opening your mouth and talking? I mean, how many times when you're doing a dialogue with your partner do you not know what you're going to say? And then you discover along the way, oh, I didn't know that about myself.
So that's a rhetorical question we don't need to answer. But yeah, a lot of people live in the part of the brain that's that judges real quickly. If their partner says anything, they want to react. They want to edit what their partner said. They don't agree with their partner, so they let their partner know they don't agree, or they said it wrong, or da-da-da.
Right.
And their partner is bombarded with judgment. And my way, and then you end up with a power struggle, and then it's my way or the highway.
Yeah.
And all of this is in the lower brain. The part of us that is trying to protect us and defend us and make sure that we get our way a lot. And that's a healthy part of the brain, but it's really, it can be dangerous in a relationship if you all you do is live in the lower brain, which tries to take care of you.
Mm.
And the upper part of your brain is the part of the brain that can create win-wins and collaborate and cooperate and think of things that you've never thought of before so that you both get your way.
Mm-hmm.
And so a big thing about the dialogue process, which we didn't really explain, when our partner talks, rather than react, we first mirror and then we validate and we empathize with what they said before. We then share our point of view.
Right.
And to mirror and validate, you have to go to the upper part of the brain where you get curious and you wonder.
Okay.
And your brain begins to release neurochemicals of well-being in the upper brain. In the lower brain, it's cortisol, adrenaline, about taking care of you. But if you mirror someone, you're put into the upper part of brain of your brain that's really a wondrous experience. Mm-hmm. If you get into mirroring well, it's a beautiful thing to slow down and imagine, just trying to imagine why your partner thinks the way they do.
I wonder, Helen, if the upper brain gets triggered by the safety of the mirroring. You know, because sometimes mirroring can be pretty robotic. I'm saying, you know, I want to talk about the laundry. You want to talk about the laundry. And you go back and forth. And then you realize, this is good. I'm safe. This feels good. And now I'm curious. Now I really, so I'm not really sure how it happens, but you know, I know when I've done this dialogue with people, myself and couples do it in front of me, something loosens up and they become smarter.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it, but they seem to be smarter
when
gets triggered from going to very rudimentary to something very sophisticated.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice to slow down with your partner. It used to be mirroring was sort of mechanical for me.
Right.
But as I do it these days, it's just rhapsodically wonderful to mirror.
Right.
I mirror most people these days because first it catches them off guard that you've listened and you care enough to see if I got it right. But it's really a joyful place to live, is mirroring other people.
I see you as living in that place. I wonder, are you ever in touch with your old brain?
Oh, yes. Yes, but yeah, maybe you could ask Carville that question.
I'll ask him in a minute, but okay. I do want to put out the number and how to get the book at 212-757-4488, Getting the Love You Want. This exercise that we're talking about, mirroring and empathizing, validating, summarizing your partner as a way of communicating, a way to get back on track, actually a way to find out what you really think and feel so you can open up to what your partner thinks and feels. Or I don't know which goes first, the chicken or the egg, but both of them happen. You tune into your partner, you tune into yourself. You can get this book by calling 212-757-4488.
This is the opposite of what we used to say. Oh my goodness, we can complete each other's sentences. In mirroring, we don't want our sentences completed. We want our sentences heard. We want to go to the next sentence and the next sentence.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to be cut off. And that curiosity that you're showing in giving your partner that space is what creates the safety with couples.
Right. And so when when you're in the romantic stage of relating, you can finish your partner's sentences for them. What happens when you stop doing that? Well, then is a good time to start mirroring. right? So couples that aren't communicating really aren't talking. They're not in that magic of knowing what the other person is thinking anymore, can come and start speaking back and forth to each other and actually get to the part where, now I know what you want to say.
Yeah. And prior to that, there is an unconscious operating assumption that we do know each other, and I do know what my partner wants and feels. And before the conflict gets open, as Helen was saying earlier, we'll also collude with each other, and even if our partner doesn't quite do it right, we just make it okay, because we don't want to break that illusion. But it is, we have a term for that. It's called symbiosis. And that's the belief that we share the same mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mind, mainly.
Right.
In the romantic stage, we sort of know that, you know, the partner, your partner has a mind different from yours, but you don't want to mess with it very much because you don't want the conflict. You love that flow mm-hmm. of energy mm-hmm. and excitement.
Mm-hmm.
But when you were talking earlier about getting smarter when you mirror,
yeah,
and that we don't know each other, well, you do get smarter when you mirror. But and mirroring has it, there are two levels to it. One is it's good communication to mirror because you get clear. So let me see. You want to go to get pizza for dinner.
I want to get pizza for
you
dinner.
You want to get pizza for dinner. Am I getting that? I want to get pizza for dinner.
Yes, you're getting
so that. You can exchange information
mm-hmm.
Without too much distortion.
Right.
If you mirror. You mirror mm-hmm. back. So we're going to go get pizza tonight. Am I getting that right? You want
yes.
to go pizza tonight.
Yes. Can you say more about that?
And that's deepened communication and accurate communication, but it's not really what the potential of mirroring is. In mirroring, you actually do get smarter because you allow another person's reality to occupy space in the furniture of your mind and to sit on your sofa.
Mm-hmm.
You allow yourself to watch their movie without criticizing it
mm-hmm.
and without trying to turn it off and run your movie on your own movie screen
right,
again.
Right.
So you get to experience that other person mm-hmm. being the other person.
Right.
And to do that, you have to shut off your movie.
Right.
Otherwise, your mm-hmm. movie running with their movie is just a distortion.
Right. And we're all walking movies, aren't we? We're all on the subway making up a movie.
Oh, absolutely.
All day long, we're writing a movie.
All the time.
And all the time. And so mirroring is a way, I'm going to stop my movie, you're going to stop your movie, and we'll look in each other's eyes.
Yes.
Breathe, and then you go ahead. And I'm going to tell you what I heard you say.
Yeah.
So you're making a very important point, and it's not just what you're saying, but it's how you're saying it
yeah.
that can really impact your partner. And you can be saying things, and you mean well, and you think it's perfectly fine, but if there's a look in your eye or a tone or if you've interrupted your partner and they're busy right now and they don't have the space to hear what you're talking about,
right.
it can turn into a fight.
Yeah.
So first it's good to ask if your partner's available or your best friend or whoever, your child, for you to give them some information or share something with them. And if your child says yes, or if your beloved says yes, then you can share what you have to say, because then you know they're available to get the information
right.
from you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just really important, if it's a conflicted area, especially, to say things with a soft look in your eye and a soft kind of tone of voice
right.
if you want your partner to be receptive.
Yeah. So a little word of education for people when they do this dialogue, as you get better at it, you realize, yes, it's best for me and my partner to do it when we both want to. It's not just, I want to have a dialogue with you, and you say, okay, all right, I'll do the dialogue. No, you want to do the dialogue when you're ready to do the dialogue. So the first step is to ask permission. Is now a good time to talk about the children? Is now a good time to talk about, you know, the education system? Is now a good time to talk about your mother-in-law? or whatever. And sometimes it's not a good time. So you find a time when it is, and you'll be receptive, that you will be receptive to eye contact and to breathing and to mirroring and to being curious. So that's one point that people need to recognize before they start just thinking, oh, automatically I get to mirror. No, both partners have to be ready.
And it's important to have an agreement about that, if I want to talk to you, I will ask for an appointment. It's also okay for you to say no to my request. And then we've created rituals that we now know works. And to say, but I don't want to talk now, and I will talk in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or maybe tomorrow morning. But I have to then make a promise. And that's not just kind of like good psychology. There's actually a neurophysiological basis for that in the brain, that the brain has to be able to anticipate positively that a closure is going to come to the request, and that a response is going to come to my question. So if I say no, but when I get back to you, the brain then goes, is facing its worst thing called unpredictability. And the brain does not deal well with unpredictabilities.
Right.
And it wants to be able to know that it's okay for now, and in a few minutes or a few hours, you're going to be back.
Mm.
And what that does, that we think what that does, is that it actually repairs the injury from childhood in which caretakers have a pattern. When the child says, mommy, 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 can I tell you about the elephant I saw walking through the garden? And mommy says, not now. But mommy doesn't say, she may say, not now, in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm busy right now, meaning, when I get ready. But she doesn't say, when? Like, Peter, I'll be available in 10 minutes.
I see, right.
And I'll be right there. And then mommy better show up in 10 minutes. Otherwise, Peter is going to make two adaptations. One, he's going to come back and say, mommy, mommy, mommy.
Right.
Or he's going to give up on mommy
and
go away and not approach her anymore. And then he'll grow up being what we call a minimizer and a turtle because he had the experience of asking and not getting. And he'll adapt to that. Or he'll be a hailstorm. And his pattern is when I get a no, I'm going to come back until I get a yes,
right,
and keep escalating my energy. But predictability in a relationship is probably one of the most biggest gifts you can give your partner.
And Carol, can you talk about the predictability of the dialogue process and your clients, how they welcome now the predictability of the dialogue, because they know when they're going to see Carol, they're going to be mirroring, summarizing, validating, and empathizing, and they do it over and over and over. So, I mean, does that at some point become a relaxant?
I keep thinking of the word safety, is that you're not going to be ambushed by someone's need to talk now. I need to talk now is a child-like experience where you didn't have a choice often with your parents talking at you. This is about talking with you, to you, in agreement with you. And so when people come in for a session, they know that this is going to be a time where each of them will really have a turn to have that space and that safety.
Because a lot of people come to couples therapy and think, oh, I'm going to beat my partner with the therapist. I'm going to get the therapist on my side.
This book has totally revolutionized doing work with couples.
Yeah.
It's totally revolutionized doing work with couples because couples are not afraid to come in for a session. They know that they're going to leave a session, I would say 9 times out of 10, feeling more connected than when they walked in.
Yeah. And the other piece of predictability in the dialogue is the process itself.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm working with you, I know that my partner or I will be asked to say, to make an appointment, is now a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Then my brain knows what's going to come next. I'm going to talk, or she's going to talk, and somebody's going to say, if I got that, instead of what in the hell do you mean? If I got that, you said blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I also know what's going to come next, which is, did I get it? And then I know what's going to come next. Is there more about that? Then I know what's going to come next. It's going to be a summary. And it's that sequencing and going, this is why, Carol, when we, Carol is faculty, that new therapists have to learn that you can't play around with the structure of the dialogue. Mm-hmm. Because if you do, you're not dialoguing, you're just having people talk in some sort of funny, structured way.
Yep.
The average marriage therapist, the couple will talk to the therapist, and the therapist will give suggestions to the couple of how to heal their, address their issues, and try to problem solve. That has been, or in the past decades. And this is an entirely different way a therapist can deal with a couple, where what we do is teach two people how to talk. They're the experts. They know what the solutions are. It's up to them to figure it out. The therapist has to stop talking and just coach the couple into learning to connect.
Exactly.
And by the way, if anyone listening, Carol is awesome. It's not about problem solving. It's just reviving and bringing out the joy in your relationship. If anyone wants to have a session or two with her, it's just transformative.
Yeah, it really is. And
thank you, Melinda. Well, couples used to say before I did Imago, can I take you home with me? Because I was a good listener.
Uh-huh.
The beauty of this is you're teaching them a tool and a way of thinking about being in a relationship that they can take home, that this is so user-friendly and healing, as was said before. It's healing for the couple to know that they've got some tools that they can use, and they don't always have to be in a therapist's office in order to talk to each other in a safe way.
Mm. And the gold in relationships, in couples therapy in general, is the feelings that come out. I mean, there's the gold. I mean, every therapist is trying to help couples feel.
Feel heard,
but also...
If you can just
but
feel
empathy,
heard.
But as you're talking, feelings come up. Mm-hmm. And just to have your partner, who in the past never was able to even identify what sadness looked like, what joy looked like, what anxiety, fear looked like, I'm thinking of a lot of men, are suddenly looking at their partner and saying, she's afraid. She has anxiety. I'm causing it, or I'm part of this. Without this dialogue, it's hit or miss. But what I'm finding in all sessions doing this dialogue, every session has understanding and empathy in it, which in the old days, you were looking for the therapist to give you the understanding and maybe even feed you a feeling every now and then. Mm-hmm. So, to me, the benefit of the dialoguing process is that feelings get stirred simply by somebody. Can you say more about that?
Mm-hmm.
It's an invitation. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, and it creates enough safety that if I am a feeling expressor, I know the structure will contain my feelings. I can express them here. If I'm not a feeling expressor, it's safe enough that I know if I do express a feeling, it'll get mirrored here. So in either case, it works, because there are two kinds of things about feeling. That's people who are feeling all the time,
mm-hmm.
and they need to regulate the feelings, because they need a little left brain going on. And then there are the other people in left brain all the time who are not expressing any feelings, because that was where they got hurt, so they shut the feeling side down.
Mm-hmm.
But the structure enables affect to be regulated, either down or up.
Right.
So that it's okay to express a feeling, you're not going to be put down about it. And the safety piece, I think this is what if we could say anything that people with could walk away from this radio show with as a benefit of reading Getting the Love You Want, is that if it isn't safe, it sucks. Just if you could just remember that. If it's not safe, it sucks. It's not going to work.
If it's not safe. Safety is the sine qua non.
It's the base of everything.
And the dialogue has this kind of hypnotic effect of safety.
Of safety.
Right.
It produces. That's its primary achievement, is it makes it safe enough in this room to to talk.
So let me tell people how to get this book.
Yeah.
It's not out yet, but you can get it this week if you call us at the Positive Mind Center, 212-757-4488 for $35 contribution to WBAI. You will get the book, let's say, by the weekend and before it's out for the public. It is a bestseller, has been a bestseller how many times?
11 times.
11 different times. Harville and Helen have both been on Oprah?
Once.
Helen once and Harville 16, 17 times. So plenty of times.
It's a great book for Valentine's.
Okay.
Coming up.
That's a great. And so I knew there was a reason it was coming out in January. 212-757-4488. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 in New York City and beyond on the web, WBAI.org. And we are talking to Harville Hendricks and Helen LeKelly Hunt, Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples, the 30th Anniversary Edition. We have it exclusively here. Are we the only ones in New York City who have it?
Of course.
212-757-4488 for $35 to WBAI. You can get a copy of the book. So I mentioned the word hypnotic, but you want to talk about
something? Yeah, and I just
something?
Wanted to say that one of the real beauties that Helen and Harville added to this new edition is the whole concept of zero negativity and bringing into the relationship a way of talking to each other. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I don't know if I'm going to be misquoting this, but there's a river that runs between you, and to stop filling it with criticism and hurtful comments and replace them with respectful, safe interactions so that couples can talk to each other about anything, even something that's not something mm-hmm. they feel good about, but it's how they're saying it that's
right.
what's important.
Right. Yeah. So the rule is there's no criticism, there's no blaming,
right.
there's no shaming. When
well,
we're sitting
it
down...
it depends on how your partner feels about what you're saying. Like your partner is the judge. Like you may think you're telling a joke.
Okay.
But your partner might not think it's funny. There's a river between the two of you is one analogy. Another is there's a space. There's an empty space. But
right.
space is replete with energy fields. And so the look in my eye when I'm talking with Harville can impact the space between us. And the goal is to not put toxins in the space between.
Mm-hmm.
The moment I do something that makes Harville feel anxious, automatically his brain puts up a defense, and he can't hear me, and he can't
mm-hmm.
trust me, and he doesn't like what I'm saying, and he doesn't want to do it if
right.
I make him anxious.
Sure.
But if I can make him feel safe, I can make requests
mm-hmm.
that maybe he'll have empathy and want to help me out on this problem I'm trying to solve.
I have to jump in also. You made the discovery that this dialogue does not only have to be between partners, right? Partners, my mother could, mothers can do it to
absolutely.
Their children. Fathers can do it to their children. I mean,
it's for every
friends can do it with friends.
Every relationship, you start with your most important person in your life. And especially if your parents start with each other. And then you all do it, but do it with your kids. Harville has coined the term relational competency. Everyone in their workplace we do it to the waiters.
Mm-hmm.
They end up giving us extra desserts. They love to be married.
Yeah, yeah. And let me just underline that for about other people.
Please do.
Because it can get categorized as a thing that intimate partners use.
Yes.
And what we are now doing and saying, because we discovered it so effective there, is we're actually bringing it out of the clinic into the public and teaching it to anybody who talks. Because talking is the most dangerous thing people do, wherever they are, whether they're at work, whether they're in church in synagogue, or whether they're in their marriage. Talking is dangerous, and the brain is monitoring that talk to see whether or not there's a threat in it,
right.
in the words. So everybody, anywhere, whether you're at work, whether you're at worship or in educational systems, if you go to the dialogue process, it's not like the three steps all the time, but if you just go to, let me see if I've got that,
right.
and can you say more about that,
mm-hmm.
instead of, no, let me tell you my opinion. In other words, the dialogue is that I'm going to take turns with you, and I'm not going to judge you.
Mm-hmm.
That then it becomes a new way of talking. The way that human beings have talked for the past, ever since they've been talking, is what we call monologue. I'm the one talking because I'm the one who knows what to say.
Right.
Dialogue is both of us talk because neither one of us knows the truth. What we do is, in dialogue, we discover each other and discover what is going on.
Yeah.
And that makes people equal
mm-hmm.
and makes it safe. So it works anywhere. It's been known to transform businesses when they brought dialogue into it as the form
this
of
this kind of dialogue you're talking about.
I'm sorry?
This kind of dialogue. Your dialogue,
kind of
the
dialogue.
One that you and Helen discovered.
Exactly.
Businesses are using it.
Businesses are using it, and their profits go up when they use dialogue in the business.
Right.
Because it makes the company safe place to work.
Right.
If you're safe, you have more motivation to show up every day and do your best because it becomes sometimes better than your family because it's a safe place to be.
Yep.
And you're not going to leave and cost the company the price of the replacement. That's the biggest cost companies have is replacing disgruntled employees. And 87% of companies have disgruntled employees.
Right.
But if you go into dialogue, the profit rate of one company, it's a profit rate of 13 companies that are using what's called a relational process, is 400% higher than companies that don't practice it. All they do is create safety.
Yeah.
So it's okay to be here.
Right.
I can talk and not get put down.
Yeah, so when you know you're going to visit the boss or to talk to the boss, he wants to talk to you.
Yeah.
You know it's going to be a productive conversation. You're not shamed. You're not going to be
walk out
in the doghouse.
Yep.
So I wanted to bring that out because I think adolescents need to be heard.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and parents just are the perfect mirrors.
Do you know why adolescents act out?
Because they don't have their parents' attention.
Exactly. If parents would listen and have dialogues with their kids when they pass the golden age of 13 and stay with that through high school, their children will not act out.
Yeah.
There will not be this parent tension thing.
I totally
agree. Because the kids will know they can talk to their parents.
Exactly. I didn't get a
chance
to talk
to my parents.
And they don't
have to do something to get their parents' attention.
And 212-757-4488 to learn how to do the dialogue. There are 18 exercises.
Yep.
Yes, in this book geared towards couples, but you'll learn as you do this work and read this book. I can take this with me anywhere.
Yes.
And you can actually get trained in this. There's Imago training.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And there's Imago staff. And this is an international organization. All built around, first, getting couples to love each other, getting couples back together again, getting people connected instead of conflicted.
Yes, that's beautiful.
Talking to each other.
You got it.
So getting the love you want, starting there, but now it's become like this international thing, primarily, I mean, I'd have to say in large measure because of this dialogue.
Yes, right. And we have launched a global initiative to teach it to the whole planet. It's called Safe Conversations, and we do that now in Dallas through an organization that we created with a bunch of our friends who are in this field, John Gottman and Dan Siegel and Ellen Bader and a variety of other colleagues. We put together this not-for-profit called Relationships First, which Helen is, she's the most masterful runner of things, and she does that and helps with it.
We are getting six microphones in this studio. I want all of those names to come in here and talk to us about safe conversations.
Talk in here and talk about
But Carol,
this.
You do some training here in New York. Can you tell us about your training? I mean, are there other trainers in New York?
At the present time, I'm the trainer in New York, and I'm going to be starting a training at the end of this month, January 31st to February 3rd for therapists, and it will be in this space on West 57th Street. I'm also going to be doing a Getting the Love You Want workshop February 9th and 10th in this space for couples. It's a Saturday and Sunday, so this is a good way to learn.
So one is for therapists, one is for couples.
Yes.
Let me ask you the question. Can a parent bring their child to one of your workshops?
Not this workshop, but as you were speaking before, I used to teach high school English, and before I became an Imago therapist full-time, I on sabbatical, studied with Harville, and I brought this back to the classroom, and I would give extra credit to any student who could mirror what somebody else had just said, because they didn't listen to each other. So it can be used in schools.
It changes the classroom.
It can
be used in schools. 212-757-4488 to get the book. There's so much we did not get to. This is the 30th anniversary edition of Getting the Love You Want, a guide for couples and for parents and for friends and for everybody else. That's coming in the next 40th anniversary edition.
Absolutely.
A guide for the planet. Let's call it.
A guide for the planet. That'd be good. A guide for the planet.
212-757-4488. What did we say? I mean, the one thing that we didn't touch on that I really thought would entice people is this idea that we're attracted to our partners, to get back to partners, because of the negative qualities of our partners.
Well, we are, but we are not conscious of that. The brain has a memory of the negative parts of the caretakers, meaning the caretaker's behavior that didn't meet a need in childhood. Doesn't mean the parent was bad. They just didn't meet a need.
Mm-hmm.
So the brain remembers a deficit and associates it with a particular type of person, namely the caretaker.
Right.
And then unconsciously the brain, for reasons I do not understand, I think it's a flawed part of creation.
Mm.
The brain says, I have to get in adulthood what I didn't get in childhood from the same kind of person that I didn't get it from in childhood.
Right.
So unconsciously you'll pick someone with a similarity to the caretaker, because the brain unconsciously says, oh, here's where it should have come from. Now I'm going to give it a second chance. So falling in love is the second chance that the brain has to get what it should have gotten the first time in childhood. So that's what the negative piece is. And then eventually that person is not going to function to meet that need because they're similar to the person in childhood who didn't meet the need. And when that shows up, you're now in the power struggle because you're supposed to. But you don't know, but it's all an unconscious dialogue.
Right. And then just to finish off, you get a chance to get the love because you enter into what's called a conscious partnership. And then you find out what needs didn't get met that my partner actually wants to help me meet.
Yes.
And what can I give them to help them meet their needs?
And you become partners in the process of mutual need meeting. That satisfies the agenda.
Harville, this is your third time on our show. We're looking to outdo Oprah. We're going to get you on 20 times. Harville Hendricks and Helen LaKelly Hunt, Getting the Love You Want, a guide for couples. 212-757-4488 for $35. It's not out yet. You can get it today. Again, 212-757-4488, $35 to WBAI. Carol Kramer, thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you all for being here.
Yes.